Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hi, this is Joe Castellano from thesportsvirus.com. Welcome to the Inside China Basin San Francisco Giants baseball podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, featuring our regular guest, two-time World Series champion, former Giants reliever, George Contos.
Gabe Kapler is not Bruce Bochy, so he's going to run things his way, and I'm sure with Farhan, they've had their discussions on what the best course of action is for the ball club.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael, the lowest prices in Marin County for over 60 years. And welcome to another edition of Inside China Basin. George Contos will be back with us again next week. Joining us this week is longtime baseball writer Tim Brown, who spent a lot of time at Yahoo Sports. Tim, how are you? What are you up to these days?
I'm waiting for the phone to ring, Joe. Thanks for filling part of a day for me. I'm practicing retirement is what I'm doing. trying to get a feel for retirement before retirement actually gets here. I'm writing a book. I am spending a lot of time on a golf course. Haven't missed a day at the gym. And reading a ton. So that's been a lot of fun, is getting back on track with, finding books that sort of just keep me engaged and inspired and all that stuff. So everybody should take a little bit of time and sort of reset.
Well,
this is my time.
Yeah, and this isn't your first foray into writing a book. You've had that experience before. Tell us about this new one that you're writing.
Previously, obviously, I wrote a book about Jim Abbott and then another one about Rick Ankiel. And so here's a little bit of the background. I've 30-some years covering baseball. And I found that in every clubhouse I've ever been in, my favorite person was always the backup catcher. There was a humility about him. There was a sort of bigger conceptual being with him. Backup catchers just get it, man. They get life, they get the game, they get all these things. And so a number of years ago, Eric Kratz and I had become friendly, and we had talked, and we had been thinking about maybe doing a project together. And the more I thought about it, the more I decided that more than writing a book about a backup catcher, I wanted to do a book about all of the backup catchers, who they are, what their culture is. And so I've spent the last several months talking to a lot of backup catchers, talking to scouts, GMs, managers. Obviously, as you know, Joe, so many managers were catchers, and many of them were backup catchers. And just sort of exploring, you know what I'm finding, Joe, is a little piece of the soul of the game. These guys exist between the numbers. They exist out of the leaderboards and in terms of stats and things like that. But without them, there's something missing in your clubhouse. There's something missing on your roster. And just sort of getting a feel for that. And it's been really great. I've had a lot of wonderful conversations about guys who, again, just sort of get it. They get the game. And so it's served to remind me what the game is about. And so I'm looking forward to finishing it and getting it out there, and I hope people like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just such a great idea, and I understand why you would choose that topic. Being a former minor league baseball announcer, I think I became best friends with those backup catchers because they would always tell me a lot about the pitchers. We'd talk about what they were throwing and their personalities, and the backup catcher always has more time to talk.
Yeah, and you know what? A lot of those guys, especially in AAA, these guys are raising the next generation of catchers. They're raising the next generation of pitchers. They're probably raising the next generation of big league coaches and managers as well, because I think that, they've probably spent time in the big leagues. They're coming back down. They're educating people on what's going on up there and how things work up there and how you carry yourself and what's important. And those guys, they're just playing ball, man. And it's really cool.
You know, it's funny that you mention this because right now with the San Francisco Giants, backup catchers are so important this season because Buster Posey is not playing as much as he normally does. And right now he's banged up a little bit with his thumb injury. So the Giants are carrying three catchers. And you start to realize the value of those guys. And a guy like Kurt Casale, who wasn't hitting at all earlier this season, he starts to swing the bat better and becomes a little more valuable. But his real value is in how he's catching. And he's doing a really good job of receiving. So I guess with the Giants, it seems like that value of that backup catcher might be even higher than a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think it's probably the same with many teams, but I do think you're right. I think that, you know, the game thinks about things like quote unquote load management now, right? I mean, how many games are you going to make your catcher work back there? And so I think you're seeing what I found is that so-called number one catchers are working fewer and fewer games. You go back, and one of my favorite stories, I talked to Bill Plummer. I don't know if you remember Bill Plummer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So Bill Plummer comes up with the Cubs in the late Bill Plummer was with the Cardinals. Rule fives to the Cubs in the late 60s, where he played behind Randy Hundley, Todd Hundley's dad. Randy Hundley, in the year that Bill Plummer was a backup catcher with the Cubs, started 160 games behind the plate.
Oh, man.
So Bill Plummer gets like four at-bats that year. In the offseason, he gets traded to the Cincinnati Reds, where Johnny Bench, at 21, had already been an all-star and caught tons of games. And so this is, you know, this is when your point being, That changed. Nobody catches 160 games. Hardly anybody catches 120 games anymore. And so, yes, guys like Casale, guys like Chadwick Trump, guys who can sort of run a pitching staff for you, guys who can frame a pitch. That's really the only place they really exist in these analytics and these new metrics and everything is the framing skills. And if you can help win a game with your mitt, with your brains, with your eyeballs, then you are a valuable guy.
It was an interesting decision, too, Tim, for Gabe Kapler, because I thought maybe he would pull what Bruce Bochy did in the past, which was to put Posey over at first base every once in a while. You know, you still get his bat in the lineup. It's sort of a day off, but maybe not really. But, you know, it's like a half day off. But he decided not to do that. He decided, hey, let's give him real days off. He's only going to catch when he's playing. How do you think that has worked out? I mean, obviously the numbers are really good for Buster, but right, at times it seems like the Giants do miss out on having Buster's bat in the lineup. You know, obviously they have the best record in baseball too, so it hasn't worked out, you know, poorly in any respect right now, but I wonder going forward.
Right, especially with the belt injury, right? You know, here's the interesting part about the Giants for me is that so many of the guys who we thought were sort of maybe on the other end of their career, Posey at 34, Longoria at 35, I know he's injured, Brandon Crawford at 34, Belt at 33. You know, these are the guys who are playing great, who are carrying this offense. And I sort of wonder what things start to look like, because everybody thought the Giants are too old. They're just waiting out these contracts, and then they can start over again at some point. These are the guys that are playing really well for them. You even go down to like Darren Ruff, who's what, 34. Wilmer Flores is probably almost 30, if not 30 already. And so I wonder second half with them, because they are an older bunch. And maybe this is what Gabe Kapler is thinking about with Buster Posey. There's a whole second half of the season to play. The Dodgers are right there. The Padres are right there. You know, who do we want to be in September and hopefully October, right? And so that probably, I'm guessing, without talking to Gabe about this particular, is what he's thinking with a guy like Posey. If you're going to come back after a year away and hit three-something and hit 12 home runs and be an all-star, well, you know, let's let that happen. And let's live to play another day. Let's live for a little bit of August, a little bit of September. And I think that's smart. You know, the interesting thing about that division, you know, I keep thinking about, like, you know, if you don't win the division, you're going to get one game of Darvish or Musgrove or Kershaw or Bueller or Gausman, probably.
Right.
And man, that is that is really rough. I think you're going to see teams really grinding into September. Winning the division is going to be critical because you could be gone in 3 hours against a really good pitcher.
Yeah, that's cool because it kind of harkens back to the old days of, hey, you got to win the division. You know, you didn't really have that backup plan. They have these cool T-shirts, too, the Giants are wearing, let the old guys play, you know. So you're talking about letting those old guys play, and that's what they're doing right now. But, you know, what really surprised me, Tim, was that those older guys, especially Crawford and Posey, they bought into some changes in their swing and their approach with three different hitting coaches. I don't know that I saw that happening, but I think that really kind of lends itself to the other players on the team buying in as well. It all kind of surprised me. I don't know that I've seen examples of veteran players willing to do that later on in their career.
Yeah, my guess is, you have to experience some sort of failure or some in baseball, obviously that happens every day. If we could see the subtle declines coming with age, you know, the bat maybe slows down, who knows, your knees, your back, your eyes, you know, all the things that start to go in your mid 30s, then, you know, I'm sure they could too. And last year was really interesting. Yeah, they played for a couple months, but they didn't play for 10. I think the sort of the climate was right for these guys who are, you know, they've won championships, they're team guys, they get it, to think to themselves, okay, but like, who am I going to be as I age a little bit? Speaking of which, I need to get one of those T-shirts. This old guy's got to play, man. Let's go.
It's a great T-shirt. Yeah. Well, you know, you look at this team, and like you said, who knows the second half. But one thing they've been able to count on is pitching. And, Kevin Gausman, I'm not going to say he came out of nowhere because he always had great stuff, but he played on some losing teams in the past. I think that he's just rejuvenated. What do you think?
I think that committing to that splitter seems to have sort of changed his career arc. He's amazing. Really, a couple of years ago when, waived by the Braves, picked up by the Reds. Is that how it happened?
I think that was it, yeah.
You know, this was a guy who was just sort of the middle of the pack, you know, number four starter, maybe number five for the Reds, couldn't even make their rotation. But for the Braves, couldn't even make their rotation. And you just sort of thought he's a guy, right? You know, nice little career, good for him, but not, you know, never really became the guy that he was supposed to be in Baltimore. And, you know, obviously he decided some changes need to be made. He's throwing a lot more of that splitter, and good for him. You know, seems like a really good dude, has worked hard, has stuck with it, has found a way. And, you know, he's sneaking up on what amounts to, you know, a full season, what, 27 starts or so with the Giants, going on 170 innings, and has gone from a 4.5-ish ERA to 2.5-ish in a full season. So pretty impressive, pretty cool. And, it was interesting when the Giants offered the qualifying offer, I thought, that's interesting. Didn't see that coming. And then, of course, he had to take it. And now at 18.9 or 19, whatever the qualifying offer was, bargain, man. This guy's been so good for them.
We'll have more with baseball writer Tim Brown right after this.
When it's time for new tires, you want the lowest prices and the best service, don't you? Well, Kane's Tire in San Rafael has you covered on both. Kane's has the lowest prices in Marin County, and they provide the warm and welcoming service that you can only receive from a family-run business. Voted best of Marin for 35 years in a row, Kane's prices beat Costco's prices every time. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street in San Rafael. Give him a call at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942 for Kane's Tire.
Let's talk about some of the big stories around baseball. I mean, the number one story right now is this Trevor Bauer situation. And, you know, Major League Baseball adopted a policy back in 2015, where they do not require criminal convictions or arrests for a player to be suspended. You know, we've seen it before with Aroldis Chapman and Addison Russell and Roberto Osuna, among the players that have had that happen. And even just recently, we saw former Giant Sam Dyson suspended for an entire season for the longest penalty under the league's domestic violence policy. So what do you think happens with Trevor Bauer? You know, right now he's just kind of up in the air after this whole situation where, you know, he has not been charged with a crime, but there are the accusations of sexual assault being brought about.
Yeah, I think that this is a very smart sort of compromise for Major League Baseball and the Players Association. So many times, you know, information comes out and it's he said, she said, and it's difficult to walk it through. You know, the police need time to look through evidence and to do what they do. And in the meantime, you know, a team, a player is sort of stuck in this, like, do you keep running him out? Do you, you know, who do you believe? You know, innocent till proven guilty, all these things. And I really like this policy because, and I think fans don't quite understand when they are put on this list. MLB, the team is not assigning guilt at that point. What they're saying is everybody, we need to step away, take a breath and understand what happened here or get as close as you can to understanding. And MLB, you know, is in a tough situation. MLB does not have subpoena power. MLB only speaks to people who wants to speak to them in terms of the investigation department. So they're waiting on this process to happen. And in the meantime, you know, trotting a guy out there, having Trevor Bauer start on a Sunday while these allegations are being made is a terrible look, both, for the game and for society and for the accuser and for Trevor Bauer for that matter. And so, you know, I think they got this one right. I think that people have to keep in mind that, you know, and this is in a hypothetical situation, that MLB is not saying this player, we believe that this player is guilty. That's not what's happening here. What they're saying is we believe that there needs to be more time, to fully assess, what has happened. And I, you know, I think I was very disappointed that the Dodgers weren't more, I don't know, aggressive leading up into, you know, his assignment on that list. I think that the notion that they were talking about, it's out of our hands. You know, in these situations, I think you have to stand for something. These clearly are very serious allegations. And for the Dodgers to have stood around and waited and allowed people to believe that they would have let Bauer make that start, I think was disingenuous at best.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe they could have put him on some kind of administrative leave. Instead, I think the organization put Dave Roberts in a really difficult position, didn't they?
I thought so, and I think that probably Dave in a off the record honest moment would say, yeah, that was brutal. I wish I didn't have to be standing there saying that. You know, for me, if I'm the Dodgers in that situation, I say, look, I understand that there's a process that needs to happen. I understand that MLB and the Players Association have to come to agreement on this, and there are phone calls that have to be made and information exchanged and at least getting a sense of what these accusations are and what, you know, what is out there at the moment in terms of evidence, whatever that may be. But at the same time, that's your brand. And that's your conscience and that's your soul. And for them to stand back and be willing to let someone else make that decision for them, I thought was not great. If I'm them, I say, look, you know, we're going to step away from this. However it ends, it ends. But in right now, he's not playing for us. We need a lot more information before we decide we're going to put him in our uniform out on that mound representing us and LA and the fans and baseball. And they lost that opportunity. I really thought that they looked weak.
I agree with you. And you know who else agrees is Dave Stewart, who is not going to attend the Dodgers' 40-year World Series anniversary celebration. I mean, I guess that's not a surprise.
Well, I was somewhat amused that Dave is talking about the unwritten rules of how you treat women. I think those are pretty well written. You know, not
yeah, they're not
women,
unwritten,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, not just women, human beings. I mean, you know, that's just not how we're supposed to treat each other, I don't think. So, yeah, good for Stu, man. You know, Stu always, he was never shy for an opinion. And, you know, good for him. If that's what he believes, I think that's important.
The other continuing story in Major League Baseball is the crackdown on pitchers using foreign substances. And George Contos and I have been talking about it quite a bit. The way they rolled it out in the middle of the season was tricky. And, you know, George thinks that, you know, this is not being done the right way. You know, you have pitchers being checked after an inning's over. They're looking all over them. It's kind of random in a lot of ways. What are your thoughts about the way it's being handled and maybe how MLB can learn going forward about how they want to try to crack down on it?
Well, I think there's two things. I don't think it surprised a single pitcher out there that MLB was cracking down on this. There were there was talk about it during spring training as far back as then, into March, I think. I'm sure. I believe there was a memo put out saying, reminding teams that there are rules on the books. Granted, they have not been enforced particularly well. I mean, unless you walk out there in a pine tar costume. but MLB did say, look, this has gone on long enough. It's as much our fault as it is anyone else's fault because we've let it go. And it's gotten out of hand, and we are going to we're going to the letter of the law at some point. And so pitchers being surprised by this, I think, is a little disingenuous. We were always going to have, whether it was at the beginning of the season, the end of the season, the middle of the season, there was always going to be this period where it looked clunky, right? You know, yeah. Where it's something new. Baseball hates new stuff. And it can be probably a little humiliating at times to have to stand there and all that. I felt that, you know, I felt bad for the umpires at point. They're, you know, this isn't their fight. They're doing their jobs. When I see Sergio Romo drop his pants in front of an umpire,
right.
I think that's just disrespectful. And I like Sergio and I like his act and I like his deal, man. I admire him, but I thought that's not fair. That's showing up an umpire who's just, you know, he got the same note that the players got. You know, this is how this is going to work. And he's like, all right, I guess I'm going to go check this guy's glove and his hat and his belt. And it's really calmed down, right? For like 48 hours, it was a big deal. And you know, then the guy in Seattle, veteran guy from Jersey, good dude, Hector Santiago.
Santiago, yeah.
You know, then it was news for a moment when he got quote unquote busted or caught or whatever. But now it's quiet again, right? It becomes part of the daily exercise, and you know, hopefully the glass now thing, obviously. Stung a little bit. If he really believes that it injured him, that's too bad. But again, this is, you know, if you were paying attention in March and all, you just knew this was coming, and I think you had time to make an adjustment.
One aspect that people are looking into is the difference in numbers before and after the crackdown. And you look at some of the top pitchers like a Gerrit Cole or, you know, with the Yankees staying on their team, Aroldis Chapman. I mean, they have really not performed well since. Now, that could be just a little bit of a coincidence. But at the same time, you know, those are guys that, you know, are getting high spin rates and all that. So I know everybody's looking at those numbers.
You know, one of the things I really like about Rob Manfred is that he is willing to consider anything. I mean, just, you know, look at the Atlantic League. He'll you know, you throw something at him, he's like, all right, let's try that. Let's see how that works. He's willing to consider everything. One of the things I'm not so sure about Manfred about is the fact that he acts very quickly on things, almost too quickly. You know, like, let these things sort themselves out. before making these vast changes. But I'll say he certainly seems to have gotten this one right, because the ball's in play more often. Hitters aren't quite as vulnerable as they were. All the things that we talked about where the game was headed 3 weeks ago, when like nobody could put a bat on a ball and the games were getting quote unquote boring and people in and out of the game were saying that the game was unwatchable. It's not supposed to be a 2-man game. It's supposed to be an 18-man game or a 20-man game. And I think they got this one right. Pitchers are going to have to get used to this, and hitters are going to be better as a result. And that's good, I think.
I don't know if you heard this quote, but I thought this was right on. Phillies pitcher Brandon Kintzler, he talked to the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he said, "The excuses I hear are amazing. I think it's ridiculous. We grew up throwing without that stuff, and now all of a sudden, everyone is dying without it. I think it's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I think it's great. Everyone who thought they were good, they're not so good anymore."
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
Every single quote is like everybody else was using it, right? Like yeah. If you took all these quotes from every single pitcher, you'd think nobody used, because everyone else saying, "Yeah, I told you."
Right.
But yeah, I completely agree. And I do think it was, this very incremental sort of thing over the years, where because MLB, was allowing, first it was rosin and sunscreen, and then it was a little pine tar, we need this. So, and every conversation ended, we don't want to hit a batter in the face. It was, every conversation ended, hitters will be killed. And so it just sort of inched up in this place, and pretty soon it got to a point where someone had to pull the trigger. But I'm highly amused at, you pull all these things together and you start to think, well, maybe we didn't have to change since nobody was using it. It's funny.
It is funny. All right, a week from today, the All-Star game in Denver. Giants fans are excited about Posey, Crawford, Gausman being part of the National League All-Star team. But all of baseball is thrilled about Ohtani and what he's doing, hitting over 30 homers before the All-Star break, and the fact that he'll be in the Home Run Derby and possibly hit and pitch in the All-Star game. Tim, this is really exciting to think about the possibilities of Ohtani in Denver.
This is so crazy. I think back to the very first day that he took batting practice with the Angels. This would have been in 18, spring of 18. It was a overcast day. It was cool. It was drizzly. And Ohtani's on a backfield. And I hadn't seen him other than just at a press conference, and he jogged by into the outfield, did a little bit of throwing, and I thought it was almost breathtaking, just the athleticism just oozing out of this guy, the way the ball left his hand, the way he moved, the way he ran. And then he got in the cage, and he just fell in love with what clearly was an unusual athlete. And now that he's through his injuries, they've sort of taken the shackles off him. I believe that, I think in part because of the injury, in part because they didn't want to injure him. The Epler-Socia group was a little less willing to sort of just let him go, play the game. Madden and Perry Manasian think differently. He's healthy. He's upright. And what's amazing to me, Joe, is I do think these kind of athletes exist in the game. I do think, every single great player probably was a pitcher and a shortstop into college. This is sort of just the way it works. And what's amazing to me is that these two skills arrive at the same time. That they exist at the same time, that they grew at the same time. This is the hard, you could probably take, there've been McKay and guys like that, even Jared Walsh with the Angels. Something is always left behind, because if you're pitching in the minor leagues, then you can't play every day, supposedly, and so your hitting gets left behind. If you're hitting every day, you can't pitch enough, so the pitching gets left behind. It's just really hard to develop a guy whose skills are going to reach major league quality level at the same time. McKay, when he got to the big leagues, he was so overmatched as a hitter, it was ridiculous. And now to see this is 176 OPS plus as a hitter, 132 ERA plus as a pitcher. This is like something we have never seen. And you just stand out there and you see his confidence growing. You see, he's just, it's glorious. It's Little League in three-tier stadiums. And I don't, it's funny because I feel like we just don't know him very well. I don't know if there's ever been a one-on-one interview with Ohtani. And obviously there's something of a language barrier, but, the Angels have been pretty forceful in terms of sort of little group things, and he's been sort of guarded. So it's very mysterious. There's almost a mystery about him, but we're seeing a little more personality. He's laughing on the mound. He's pumping a fist. He's got a little sort of semi-bat flip thing going on. His teammates obviously love him. And imagine that, the Angels with one great player that everybody wants to watch. It seems like they just can't stop being that team.
Pretty much. I actually would love to see a home run derby with him and Madison Bumgarner in it. Bumgarner has prodigious power. He's not, the same hitter as Ohtani, obviously. But he was always the guy that, when he came up, you definitely didn't want to go get a hot dog or something. He's that one Giants pitcher who could really hit.
Yeah. Another great athlete. But if you were to give Bumgarner 500 plate appearances, he'd hit 120.
Exactly.
this guy's going to hit 60 home runs. So
it's amazing. Yeah.
Pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. Hey, to finish up, Tim, I'll never forget when I first met you. I was doing play-by-play for the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, and the manager was Tim Flannery. And you were out there. I don't know why you were out there. You were doing some story on minor league baseball or something. You can maybe remember that. But Tim Flannery, he fell on some hard times physically, and now he's doing a lot better, the former Giants third base coach. And everybody's happy to hear that because he's one of the best people I've ever met in baseball. What can you say about Flan?
So, yeah, that was, what it was? It was during the strike. I went out and spent a week.
94, yeah.
Yeah, I just picked a team out of nowhere and just joined in with them, got on a bus and took a trip around the Cal League and just happened to be, Flan and it was Dean Traynor and Mike Basso was the coaching staff. Just decided to go spend a week on the minor league road and it was a lot of fun. And, I've texted with Flan. I'm glad he's doing better. The thing with Flan is, he is the most spiritual human being I've ever met. And I don't even mean religious necessarily. I just mean he gets the world. Mm-hmm. There is a, groundedness to him that just doesn't exist anywhere else. I remember asking, how he would stand like, it seemed like 20 feet from the batter's box with his facing in the wrong direction, facing the outfield. And I said to him, I said, aren't you afraid of just getting smoked over there?
Yeah.
And he says, no, man, I've got the golden armor on. I'm like, I see no armor. It's not going to happen. That during that trip, I wrote a story about Flan, about he and his guitar and just sort of moving through the world and teaching guys how to play ball. And we were in some like motel in, I want to say Modesto. And I'm sitting out there reading a book early afternoon, waiting to go to the ballpark. And one of the doors opens in this motel and it's Flan. He goes, hey, Brown. He says, come here. So I go over. Again, I barely know this guy. And he says, I wrote a song. I want you to listen to it. And it was based on the story that I had written about him and his guitar. And there were two queen beds in this room, in this motel room. And we're sitting there, like, knee to knee while he's playing the guitar and singing me a song. And I'll never forget thinking to myself, like, what happened? Like, where am I supposed to be looking? Am I looking in his eyes? That seems a little weird. But he was so, like, sincere and beautiful. And that song ended up on one of his CDs. And, you know, Flan is about my favorite person on earth. And I'm so happy that he's doing well. I saw Boach recently, and, you know, Boach just had another hip replaced. I think he's running out of body parts. he gave a good report, and I reached out to Flan. He seemed good. So I'm just glad that he's upright, moving around, and, you know, because we all need that sort of spirituality as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, that's a great story. And I'll never forget, you know, those bus rides with him were hilarious. And one of the things that sticks in my mind, I'll never forget, was that Daryl Strawberry, I think at the time with the Yankees, was upset. There was a story that he was upset because his coffee maker didn't work at the Waldorf Astoria in New York. And Flan said to me, I am so glad we're not staying at a place like that. Well, you know, I've got my coffee, and we just came out of some dump hotel in Visalia, and he was the happiest guy in the world.
Flan, man, got a great perspective on the world. My favorite.
Absolutely. Tim, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the book. I'm glad you told everybody about that. I can't wait for that to come out, you know, whenever that is, next year. I know that's a lot of hard work. Good luck with it. And we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks, Joe. Take care of yourself.
That's longtime baseball writer Tim Brown. Next week, George Contos will be back here on Inside China Basin. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening on the sportsvirus.com and the Believe Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.